Good afternoon. Thanks very much for coming today. This is the UCSD Health and Wellness Lecture Series, and I'm delighted you're all here today. We'd like to thank the sponsors briefly. They include the Community Advocates for Disability Rights and Education, which is an association here at UCSD for staff, faculty, students, and others interested in disability-related issues. We've also had some sponsorship from the Vice Chancellor of Business Affairs, the School of Medicine, and from Health Sciences at UCSD. I'd also like to mention that Elaine Reardon makes this all possible, and we'd like to thank her. And also would like to have a special thanks to Mark Elder and the other folks with the Media Center and also people with the Office for Students with Disabilities. This is the first time we're going to be using real-time captioning on a broadcast, and we hope if all goes well, it'll be available in all future broadcasts. I'm the Director of Accommodation Counseling and Consulting Services here at UCSD. My name's Barry Nyman, and we provide services to staff and faculty with almost any kind of a medical condition that may influence their ability to do their job, and the focus really is on job accommodation and making sure that supervisors and employees work through the issues so that people can be productive. It's my pleasure today to introduce Dr. Georgia Robbins Sadler. She's a clinical professor of surgery at UCSD at the School of Medicine, and she's also the director of community outreach at the Moores UCSD Cancer Center. I've been told that there are more than 20 million Americans who are either deaf or hard of hearing. And in the talk today, Dr. Sadler and her group will provide information about the program that they've developed for people who are deaf or hard of hearing. And it's focused on promoting enhanced access to vital information. And as far as we know, it's the first of its type in the nation. And I've heard many times that the only handicap that some people experience really might be associated with the attitudes of people, especially as they're trying to get into the labor force. So please join me in welcoming Dr. Sadler.
And I watched him struggle, both as a patient, as a person in the workforce, and as a person who is trying to be a productive member of society. So I salute you all for coming, because you are the people that I really do want to talk to. You're interested, and you're open-minded, so thank you. Workplace diversity really works. It's challenging. It takes special considerations. First, you need to find someone who's different from you. And then you need to make the whole workplace work. But when it works, it's awesome. And I would invite any of you to come over to see our team, and some of my members are over here, that we just have fun as well as get a lot of work done. So I would encourage you all to talk to any of them you'd like. Well, why is workplace diversity so important? Well, first of all, we're a healthcare facility. We're a research facility. We're a teaching facility. We should be the model of workplace diversity. We should show the rest of the community, the rest of the world, how to do it. And so you are the people that can make that happen, but it doesn't happen just because you want it to happen. You need some skills. And you need to base your experiences on other people's success stories. And I think at the Moores Cancer Center at UCSD, we've had a huge volume of success in working with diverse communities, and one of those communities is the deaf community. The hard of hearing community is not actually a community. They don't have their own language, they don't have their own culture, and they don't gather together around those two characteristics. They tend to be more part of the mainstream community, so they are part of the rest of the community. But the deaf community is quite unique in having its own language in America. It's American Sign Language. And if you're coming from Mexico, you speak Mexican Sign Language, or you communicate using Mexican Sign Language. So a very unique set of cultural considerations. And beyond that, just the language considerations, there are many others. But when we have a workforce that represents the community, we can better meet the needs of the community. We can learn from the community what its needs are because we have someone in our own midst who is a spokesperson for that community. And it just makes good socioeconomic sense. Here we are trying to find ways to make everyone as productive as possible. But if we don't open the doors to employment, that can be very discouraging. And yet, if you don't know how to open the doors, or you don't know how to employ someone who's different from yourself, that's hard. So today we're going to talk about how to overcome that, because when we talk about workplace diversity, we're actually talking about every single one of us in this room. None of us are the same person. None of us have the same background, the same history, and probably none of us have the same future. So we are all representative of the community, and it's important. Look at the differences in diversity. Look around the room. We have gender diversity, we have age, we have religion, we have economic diversity, sexual orientation, ethnic background diversity, cultural background diversity, work style, fashions, how we dress. You know, I came dressed today to talk to you. But if it were Saturday, I'd probably be in my gardening clothes. I'm diverse within myself. And each of you are diverse within yourselves. But then when you bring us all together, we still maintain that great diversity. But then you look at physical characteristics, and we're also diverse in that regard. Some of us have motor skills that are better than others. I don't type that fast, and I make a lot of mistakes, and probably a lot of you type like the wind. We're diverse in our motor skills. So if there were a typing test, I wouldn't have a job here, probably. But that's not the test that I was given. The test was, could I get enough down on paper to make my thoughts make sense to someone else? And so finding the right placement for each of us is important. There's not a one-size-fits-all. It's finding the right job for the right person with the right skill set. We have people with differences in speech. Some people have a speech impediment. Some members of the deaf community don't speak. It's hard to speak if you've never been able to hear. Every single word you enunciate has to be memorized. You have to memorize the placement of your tongue, the push of your breath, the duration of your emphasis on each syllable, and it's all memorization. There's no oral reinforcement. Think how hard that would be. And then vocabulary. You hear a new word. The shibboleth of marketing. And you say, what was that word, shibboleth of marketing? But you heard me say it. Then you hear somebody else say it and somebody else say it. And pretty soon you're saying it. And then you go and you look up what it means because you sort of know what it means, but you've heard it used four times. If you're deaf, you never heard it used. For the first time, you saw it written down. And it's a big, long, hard word. So now you're going to see it for the first time. You don't know how to pronounce it. You haven't heard it pronounced, and you haven't heard it used in context. It's much harder to grow your vocabulary if you can't hear. So when we look at the data, and it looks at the deaf community and their literacy, if they've been trained in sign language, the literacy is A+. But in English literacy, maybe third to fifth grade. Because there has not been the opportunity to hear language over and over again to reinforce it. That is not a reflection of intelligence or ability to learn. It's just opportunity to learn that was not available to a deaf person. Visual, we have many people who are losing their hearing, losing their sight, I'm sorry. Macular degeneration, we have an aging workforce. We have people who have eye injuries, car accidents, simple little things that make things go double vision, a head injury, fall off a bike, and all of a sudden you have problems with one eye. These are physical changes that make us different. Tactile, we each have different abilities. If you are a survivor of breast cancer and you have had chemotherapy, you probably don't have the same ability to feel that you had before your chemotherapy, because the chemotherapy itself, while it's saving your life and killing the cancer cells, is also killing some of the nerve cells in the tips of your fingers and your toes. And so you don't feel the same way you used to. So if your job is in the gardening department, you may now have trouble feeling what you're about to cut and be cutting your own finger from time to time. So these are considerations. Today, we're part of what we think of as mainstream, and tomorrow we're different, just because some fluke thing happens to us. So no matter how much mainstream you feel, tomorrow you may not be. And so it's in all of our interests to try to understand diversity better and do better by people who are different from ourselves. Open doors, open opportunities. And then the last category I want to mention is mental differences. You will have people who have schizophrenia. Put on medication, they're perfectly productive people. Without medication, they suffer. They're in anguish. But someone who has now gone through medical care and is looking for work, why not employ that person? Just because you've had a history of an illness doesn't mean you can't work. So keeping an open mind about any of these differences, these are people just like us. They could be us, they could be our children, they could be our siblings, our sisters, whatever. So keep those things in mind, please, as we go through this. Now today, I'm going to really just talk about the deaf and the hard of hearing folks, because we've created a wonderful program, and Michelle Null is here, and I want to just have her wave her hand, because many years ago, probably 1993, I put in an application to the Academic Senate here at UCSD, and I asked them for a $6,000 grant, because I thought we should be reaching out to the deaf community the same way we reach out to the African American and Hispanic and Native American Indian. Different language, different culture. Why not look at that group as an equally disadvantaged group in terms of accessing cancer information and healthcare? So the Academic Senate blessed me with a $6,000 grant, which was all I needed to get one student from UCSD hired. And I'm sad to tell you, at the time, we only had one deaf student. And I was lucky enough that I was able to recruit her, and she came to work for us. She just finished pharmacy school. So happy ending. You opened doors for students. We allowed one student in, encouraged her to thrive when she got here, found opportunities for her when she was here, and she found the rest of the way herself. And she's now a practicing pharmacist specializing in oncology. I'm delighted to tell you. So with that one grant, I hired Jessica Hong, and together we went down and we talked with the deaf community of San Diego and said, do you have needs related to cancer? We're reaching out to all these other groups. Are there needs in your community that we could, as a university and as a cancer center, help to meet better? And the answer was a resounding, absolutely, come on board. That was pretty exciting because I went there not really knowing if we'd be welcomed or shut out of the door. It was a risk. But it just shows if you just take a little risk, what can happen, all the good things that can follow that. One, willingness to fail, willingness to be rejected, willingness to look really stupid. Because the person talking to me, Leslie Ellion, could have said, what a stupid thing. We don't care about you coming here. We don't want to work with you. Instead, she said, come on in and let's get to work. So we rolled up our sleeves and wrote a bunch more grants, did a bunch of data collection with the grant from the Academic Senate. We turned that into a $25,000 grant from the Komen Foundation because the community told us we lack information about breast cancer and cancer in general. So the Komen Foundation, as you know, funds breast cancer research. They gave us a nice grant for about $25,000 to work with the deaf community and partner with them. We found a great need for more information, and so we wrote a grant to the Alliance Healthcare Foundation here in San Diego. They gave us a $118,000 grant to create a video in sign language because one of the barriers to getting information to the deaf community is access to information. And today we're fortunate to have someone doing typing for us. As I'm speaking, she's typing so that my deaf colleagues can see what I'm saying, just as you can hear what I'm saying. So working with my colleagues at Deaf Community Services, and then we added in Bovi Productions from San Diego, a wonderful production company that was very community savvy and wanted to work with us and produce some videos. And then Gallaudet University in Washington, D.C. came on board with us. And the other major institutions, the National Association for the Deaf, recognized what we were doing and offered to help. So it was a chance just to keep reaching out. We ended up with, in addition to those grants, almost $1 million grant from the California Endowment to make more videos in sign language and increase the community's awareness. They went on to get, I guess now we've had three or four $1.6 million grants from the National Cancer Institute to continue our work in this area. We produced a whole cadre of medical students from UCSD, the only program like it in the country. It's a two-year program to make a group of physicians who are culturally and linguistically competent to care for the deaf community. That does not mean they are completely fluent in sign language, but it does mean they can conduct the common courtesies of the interview, the basics of an interview in sign language, and they also know when and how to use an interpreter. We continue to make videos in sign language. If you look on Google and you just Google ASL for American Sign Language and the word cancer, you'll come up to all of our videos that we've posted on the internet now, which makes them available 7/24. And while they are signed, for those of you who do not sign, they are also open captioned, which just as this is being captioned, and they are also voice overlay, so you can access them that way. And they're really written for an audience low literacy in English, high literacy in sign language. So it's a whole new series of resources that we now have for the deaf community. And our final grant that we've just gotten will allow us to create a training program for interpreters who are working in sign language to give them more knowledge and skills in oncology, how to care for cancer patients and communicate in that area. So that's really how this got started. Now, the deaf community itself, as Barry Nyman mentioned, it's quite large if you look at both the deaf and the hard of hearing, and it's most recently estimated around 35 million and growing. That's a lot of folks. When you think that San Diego County alone is about 3 million, that's 10 times the size of our community here. A large community, but growing because the hard of hearing community is growing. Our population is aging, our workforce is aging, and many of the folks in our community are now going to increasingly be hard of hearing. So let me talk to you a little bit about who are the different groups. There are two main groups. The one is the deaf community. The other is the hard of hearing community. But within those groups are subgroups. And it's very important to understand the differences if you are to hire people for your work teams in these groups. So within the deaf community, there are two main groups. People who lose their hearing before they acquire a fairly good range of speech. So a child who loses her hearing before she's 3 years old will have very limited speech skills, but she'll still have some, more than a child who is born deaf. Now, a child who loses her hearing or his hearing when they're 16 years old will likely have a full complement of speech at that point. And then the challenge will be maintaining their speech because they can't hear themselves anymore as they've lost their hearing. So that, the prelingually before speech and postlingually, are two main groups, two different ways of categorizing it. And the hard of hearing are mostly grouped into early life loss of hearing, deterioration of hearing, or late life, part of the aging process. So if you have people who are deaf, and they may be pre- or postlingually deafened, there are several things that you should always consider. And I'm assuming we're starting from the very ground of we're having an interview set up with someone who tells you that he's deaf and has alerted you to that fact ahead of time and would like an interpreter. It is your responsibility to pay for the interpreter. You are the employer. You should not expect the deaf person to come with their son to translate or to pay for an interpreter themselves. That is your responsibility. Depending on the complexity of your work, you may want to have a higher level interpreter. There are about four or five levels. And if you are in a medical situation where you're hiring an interpreter to talk about a very complicated surgical procedure or treatment option, you want to have the highest level interpreter you can find. For a job interview, you may be looking at someone with a first or second level of interpreting skills, at least. You do not want someone who's practicing. That's not fair. Every employee or potential employee has the right to a fair and equal opportunity to secure that position. So your first thing you're going to do is ask them if they would like an interpreter, because some may have been raised in the oral tradition where they haven't learned sign language, and they will lip read and write notes. So this is a really important first round of consideration when you have opened your doors, and I would encourage you to open your doors by, when you have a job, not just putting it in the newspaper, but calling Deaf Community Services of San Diego and ask them if they would broadcast a job opportunity to the deaf community at large. Now, there will be some jobs you say, oh, someone who's deaf couldn't possibly handle this because it's entirely a receptionist job. There are ways around that. If the workload is huge, that may be too cumbersome for a deaf person to want to put up with. But there are many other jobs where there will be occasional phone conversations. My team's on the phone all the time. They just aren't using the phone piece. They're using voice relay, typing back and forth, instant messaging. So there are new devices now that have just broken through in the last 10 years that have completely changed the work scene for people who are hearing challenged and really have opened the doors. If we take off our blinders about how the job should be done or has been done in the past, and we start to think creatively. Most people use email now anyway, and much of the job can be done with email. And then you can do job sharing. So one of my colleagues across the room, several, two of them, three of them are hearing, and two of my colleagues are deaf. And so when the deaf person really has to have an oral conversation, they'll go to a hearing partner and ask for some help. And it's teamwork. We all work together because the deaf person is bringing something very special to my program. And that's worth job sharing on some responsibilities. The other question you want to ask is, if they are in the oral tradition and don't sign, how will you communicate? Imagine you were interviewing and someone showed up and they only spoke Spanish. Well, that wouldn't be too good if your clientele was English. But if your patient clientele is Spanish and you want a native speaker, that may be the perfect person, and you need the interpreter. You may be the person who needs an interpreter because you want someone who does really basic Spanish and who's completely within the community of only Spanish-speaking women, for example. So there are times when you will need an interpreter more than the employee, a potential employee needs an interpreter. And then the other thing is a socialization process within the deaf community. Some people are brought up in the deaf culture and are culturally deaf. Others are brought up in mainstream culture. And these are just things to be aware of. It's not something to intimidate or make the process more cumbersome, but I'm trying to help you to be culturally sensitive if a deaf person has applied for a job, and give that person a better chance at having a really good interview on equal footing. Are there any questions? Let me just ask for an opportunity, because I would like this to be back and forth, not just one way. And if you have questions as we go, just raise your hand and I'll repeat them for the audience so we can hear the questions. So courtesy. Someone comes in to your office. You now have an interpreter there because you've asked them that question. What do you need to do if the person's deaf? So the interpreter's there. You also want to know, do you lip read? Would you like to note write back and forth? Would you like to do a combination of these various ways of communicating? All of them are equally effective. In the situation where the interpreter fails to appear, you always have the video relay and you always have the other relay services you can fall back on. So if you have scheduled a person who's deaf, and they're sitting there waiting to be interviewed, and the interpreter does not show up, don't cancel the interview. Start it and just apologize that your interpreter has failed to show up, not their interpreter. We failed on our end to have our interpreter show up. But let's at least see how much introductory we can do, but maybe none. The person may say, I really feel it's important that I have an interpreter or I can't come forward in my best foot. And then you must be respectful of that. It would be like you going on an interview in Germany and there's no interpreter for you. And the interview's in German. How unfair would that be for you to try and communicate your best foot forward in German? So giving the opportunity, if you have an interview and the interpreter fails, again, this is all about open communication. and feeling comfortable not knowing. We like to be in situations where we know what's supposed to happen next. And it's very unsettling when we're in a situation where we aren't sure what's going to happen next and how it should be done and what's right and what's wrong. The degree to which you can just be open and honest and say, I'm walking in unfamiliar water right now. Help me to understand how is the best way to go forward. You have a person there for an interview and you may be writing notes back and forth. The person may say, let's reschedule. That's fine. But the person may say, well, let's have a little conversation so you can get to know me. And that's where note writing and lip reading can be helpful. I have set up in our offices computers side by side where we bring the main desktop and we have a laptop. So it's like instant messaging, but it's side by side. And so I'm writing, Matt's writing back to me, I write something back to him, and we're going back and forth. It's almost as fast as speaking. I'm not that slow a typist, by the way. I've gotten better. But it's a wonderful way to communicate because it shows Matt the real person. So I can really get to know Matt, and I'm going to have to change my style of interviewing a little bit. You know, it has to be a little more fluid than we would normally do in an interview. Me asking more open-ended questions, but while he's writing and saying, while you write, I'm going to write some things for you, and then we can swap screens. Right? So now I'm reading his screen, and he's reading my screen. And then we swap back, and I answer his question, and he answers my question. We do this a lot in the workday. It has two benefits. It assures really, really clear communication. Not only because we're writing it and we're making sure it's clear, but there's a written record. We can go back and see if there was miscommunication, and we can ask for clarification. Did you mean two of these in two drawers or just two drawers? Is that a typo, or what did you really mean? So it helps us to communicate better that way. Now, if you are going to be talking to someone with or without an interpreter, you still want to have your face in clear view of the person with whom you're speaking. So it's, can you imagine if you're turning your head to the person who's trying to read your lips? It sort of sounds like this. Welcome to, it's really nice to have you here. How many kids do you have? And you know, it's a broken because they can't read your lips. So always face on. If you're in a clinical setting, no mask. Until you finish the conversation, no hands on your mouth. Because, again, you've lost it. And a lot of us are, especially when someone's reading your lips, they're looking at your teeth. And they're looking at your mouth. And so when someone's that intent on your mouth, your instinct is to cover it. Just in case you have some lunch or breakfast left there. Close inspection. So brush your teeth before you... No, I'm just teasing. Always brush your teeth. Very important. So thinking about not covering your mouth, not turning away from that person is very, very important. The other thing to think about is avoiding glare. So if the person I'm interviewing is trying to read my lips, A, they're under stress because they're on a job interview, and now I've put them looking into the glare. That's a common mistake because I'm giving them the beautiful view of the garden. It's a polite thing to do. I'm looking at this boring, cracked wall, and I give them the nice view to the outside. The problem is my face is in shadow now, and they're trying to look at my face, my eyes, my lips, my gestures against the bright background of the window. So it's really the opposite. We do intuitively, it's polite to give them the view. It's not the best situation. Ideally, you want that person, the person you're interviewing, to sit so they can look without anything distracting on their vision, which means they might be looking against a really nasty wall, but at least they're not going to have the distraction and the fatigue of looking into the light over and over again. The other common mistake that people will make is we'll have an interpreter, and the interviewer will talk to the interpreter. No. I'm talking to the person that I'm interviewing, not the interpreter. Although I use third person. Well, would you please ask him about his work history at Gallaudet? No. Tell me about your work history at Gallaudet. I understand you worked for the newspaper, and I understand before Gallaudet you were at Rochester Institute of Technology. Tell me about what you did in both places with the newspaper. You have a long history of working with the newspaper. I'm ignoring the interpreter. The interpreter is actually sitting beside me, not my person I'm interviewing, but sitting beside me so that the person I'm interviewing can see the person signing and my facial features, what I'm gesturing, and when I'm done speaking. It's a whole different way of approaching an interview. And I'm constantly looking at the person I'm talking to, not the interpreter. The interpreter is invisible to you. You thank them for coming at the beginning, and when the interview's over, you thank the person for interpreting. That should be your only interaction with the interpreter. There are exceptions, and my colleagues will tell you there are times when they get frustrated because they can read the interpreter's lips, don't forget, and they know what they said, they know what they signed, and the interpreter missed something really important. So you could be in an interview, and there's tension between the deaf person and the interpreter because the interpreter is not getting it right. And that's a challenge because while we have American Sign Language, there's not the same rigorous training that we have for English. So students often get different regional dialects and interpretations of sign language. There's not even a universal sign language. So we have American Sign Language, French Sign Language, Russian Sign Language, Spanish, British English, Mexican, you just go on down, Moroccan, Pakistani, they're all different. There's no universal sign language. Well, the same thing happens regionally. We don't have a rigorous school. The community is actually fairly small when you consider the size of our national population. And so to provide education across the board is difficult. And not every parent wants their child to learn to sign. They think they can mainstream a child and the child would be better off. So again, we have all different levels of language skills here. And you may be in a situation where there's tension between the interpreter and the person you're interviewing. And then you need to stop and say to the person you're interviewing or to the patient you're talking to, can you tell me what's happening here? And that can include writing a note to that person. It's okay. The person you're talking to is the number one person, not the interpreter. That's the most important lesson. If you can follow that rule, you'll have respect from the deaf community. So within the deaf community, the people who are hard of hearing, again, you have prelingual loss of hearing, which is not complete deafness, but loss of hearing, and there are varying gradations of that. And there are people who have age-related loss of hearing. So the person who has age-related loss of hearing will have the same literacy level that anyone who hears has, because they've had the benefit of all the education given to the public. The person who has partial hearing loss prelingually may have some of the same challenges that a deaf person has, but less so because they do have some oral reinforcement and they can often amplify the hearing they do have with hearing aids. The other thing you'll often hear about are cochlear implants. And increasingly, young children are born with deafness and they're being given a cochlear implant shortly after birth to increase their access to sounds. It doesn't work as well for someone who's been deaf most of their life, because if I suddenly put a chip in your ear for Chinese, you simply would not understand Chinese just because you can hear it. That's what we're talking about with the cochlear implant. We're putting in a way that they can hear English, but if you've never learned English, it means nothing to you. The sounds don't link to written words or signs. So if the sign for kidney is a K, tapped on your side, or dog is this, you're not going to see the word dog or hear dog and know that that's the sign for it. So there's some real challenges while we're making huge progress to help people who wish to recover hearing. It's not a good fix. It's not a permanent, sure fix. There are also people in the community who don't want a cochlear implant. Let's see, all the people with brown hair in the room. How about I change your hair to purple? Okay? No, of course not. You're a brunette. You've been a brunette all your life. You're going to be a brunette the rest of your life. You've been deaf all your life. You're actually quite comfortable and happy being part of the deaf community. No, I don't want to be changed. Well, our physicians and our nurses view deafness from a pathological perspective. There's something wrong with you if you're deaf, and we can fix it. We would like to fix it. The deaf person simply doesn't hear, but every other way, they're fine. They just need us to be able to communicate to them, and then they work just fine. So patients come to us who are deaf, and they distrust us. Employees come to us who are deaf, and there's a little distrust because we have this view that we need to fix them, and we're a medical center. We should fix people. So people who are deaf and hard of hearing, there are other things you can think about. Besides keeping your face in full view, enunciating your words as if you're talking to an audience. I'm being a little more careful to be clear in my pronunciation because I'm on a microphone and I'm trying to reach the back of the room. Same thing when a person is deaf. You're going to just enunciate a little bit more. And you may speak a little more slowly just to put a break between your words. It helps. Midway through the first few minutes of your conversation, stop and say, how am I doing? Am I speaking so you can understand me? Are you doing okay with my lip reading? If you have a mustache or a beard, an accent, it makes it much harder for a deaf person to understand and read your lips. So again, anytime I'm talking to a person who's deaf, I will always stop early in the conversation and say, how am I doing? Me. Not how are you doing, how am I doing? Am I speaking so that you can understand me? Is that okay? Expressions of warmth. You know, we all respond to that. I'm so glad you came in today. Thank you. As opposed to, we can convey so much warmth in our voice, in our face, in our inflection of how we gesture. Expressing pleasure that you've come today. Thank you for taking time. Things that we routinely do, but you may want to do a little bit more just to be sure the message is conveyed. And gestures are so helpful. If I'm just talking here and tell you to come sit down, you're not sure where I want you to come sit down. But if I say, come on up here and sit over here, here's a free chair, you know exactly I'm talking to you, and I'm telling you to come here to this chair. It helps. It helps with people who hear, but it helps even more if you're trying to understand someone's lips. And the other thing that's really important is just to relax. This is not a test. This is a human being. This is a human being who's trying to get a job, who's trying to be in the workforce, who's trying to be the best person they can possibly be. So if you relax, the other person will relax. And that will make a huge difference for that other person as well as for yourself. And there are some considerations in the deaf community that if you're a hearing person, you wouldn't know. If I'm sitting there talking to you and I ask you 5 times, could you please repeat that? About the 3rd time, I get uncomfortable asking you 1 more time and you're getting annoyed with me. The 4th time, you're really annoyed, and the 5th time, you're thinking, I wish she would listen more carefully. Or you might be thinking, maybe she has a hearing problem, which is possible. But the flip side is, it's okay to repeat your question, to ask for clarification, when the goal is respectful effort to try to communicate clearly. If you're not paying attention, that's a different story. If you're listening to the conversation in the room and it's distracting, which often happens in my office because I keep an open door, I will say to my colleague, Patty, just a second, I have to close the door because I'm hearing this other conversation outside. Give me 1 second. Close the door. I say, now, could you tell me 1 more time? And after a couple of times, if I can't understand, I say, I really care about what you're telling me. Could you write it for me? Just short. So I can get the key words. makes all the difference in the world. Because the goal is not to embarrass her. I just need to understand her. And she me. So I will often write something down that I know is confusing. And it's important that it be clear. So whether it's a medical setting or a work setting, the goal is always clear communication. And that's what you're trying to do. And so there's never a problem with asking someone to repeat, as long as you're telling them, I'm really sorry, but I don't understand. Let's write. Can we write? Can we do it in some way? The goal is I need to understand you so we can have the best conversation possible. So as long as you're listening, we're doing fine. And also, when you're making that effort to communicate, you are also displaying a true, genuine interest in what that person is saying to you. You're putting value on their information. So Laura's been working on a website. Laura's our intern from Rochester Institute of Technology. And she has been doing a whole bunch of work with us. And so I'm happy that she won the prize today because she has to go home this week. So it'll be nice to go home with some tacos from Rubio's in her belly. But talking with her, she was making a website and making sure that we were understanding each other, communicating back and forth, so that it was absolutely clear that my goal was not to make her feel badly because I couldn't understand what she was saying or she couldn't understand what I was saying. The goal was that she learn while she's here. And by the way, we do have wonderful relationships with Rochester Institute of Technology and several other universities, Gallaudet. So if any of you have positions that are open, please call us and we will connect you with the people at those schools who can either send you an intern for the summer or who can send you some potential employees. So that's always important to know. So I end up using whatever tools I have. Anything that I can think of, pictures, books, videos, anything that I can to make sure that the team is all on the same page. We use interpreters. We'll put up a screen just like this and write back and forth so that we're all seeing the same summaries of our conclusions. Anything that works, we'll try. And it's open season. Anybody can suggest anything. And we'll try it and see if it works. And sometimes things are better for one setting than another setting, but the goal is always clear communication. Also be aware that there are a lot of assistive listening devices that the deaf community now has access to that can be helpful. Hearing aids for those who can amplify their residual hearing. Cochlear implants we talked about earlier. Phone amplification. The telephone company will put an amplifier on the phone free of charge. Blinking lights. So in our part of the cancer center, our smoke detector, our fire alarm, also has blinking lights on it. Because my whole team, more than half my team is deaf or hard of hearing. So I had to make sure that my team was safe because we work late at night, on weekends. If there were a fire, in the daytime of a workday, we'd all grab each other and go. But on a weekend or evening, I needed to be sure that my team would know we have to get out of the building. So blinking lights are important if you're going to add a deaf person to your staff or things like the fire alarm. But they also can be useful to signify, like on our TTY machine for the teletype machine, we have a blinking light there to tell us there's a message waiting so that the person can see that. Vibrating devices. You know, we all have things that vibrate now. It's like, poof. So the deaf person has a sidekick or a BlackBerry or something else, another way of constantly staying in communication. So I can send a message to Matt, and his sidekick will vibrate wherever he is in town working, and we can be in communication that way. Motion detection devices, something that we're actually working on with Bioengineering and Computer Sciences Department. We've developed a wonderful partnership with them. We've gotten a grant from the Chancellor to have their doctoral students work with our undergraduate students to try and develop some devices. And so we're working on a motion detection device. So Patty, who's not here today, will often be working late into the evening because she comes a long way and would rather stay here than go home after the rush hour. And so if she's here late at night and I walk up to her and she chose the corner of the office to put her desk where her back is to the door, I have to walk up and make sure she sees me by making signs. And that's polite in the deaf community. In the hearing community, you would never do that. You would never do this to get someone's attention. It's rude. Or run my hand under like this to get her attention. It would be considered rude. In the deaf community, it's polite because I'm not going to scare her when I walk up behind her. So I'm trying to make enough motion that catches the corner of her eye and she knows someone's coming from as far away as I can start signaling her. Flipping the lights on and off. If you're giving a talk and there are several people in the room who are deaf, flipping the lights on and off is polite. You would never do that to a hearing person. They would be offended that you would try and get their attention that way. In the deaf community, it's acceptable. Tapping someone on the shoulder. We have limits around us, spatial limits around us. But if you're deaf, you may need to tap someone to get their attention. It's polite. Doing it respectfully, obviously, but politely doing it is acceptable and appropriate. And, of course, the use of mirrors can be very helpful. So putting mirrors on desks so you can see someone coming, and that increases your field of vision. In the work environment, asking for help, ask what will help is important, being open and saying, you know, give me some ideas. Advocate for your colleagues. Barry Nyman's had me call him many times saying, Barry, I need an interpreter, and the university's giving me a hard time about an interpreter for my team. It's graduation. We really do want an interpreter there. We're graduating 5 medical students. Help us advocate for my team so they can go. They've worked so hard. So being the strong, committed person for your colleagues, because you can often be more effective as an advocate because it's not self-serving to you. It's serving the university community, and that's important. And involve your colleagues. You know, I could have come alone today, but we brought half my team is here. So it's nice to get people to meet other people. Now, if you have a deaf colleague you're hiring or a hard of hearing colleague, you know you've met part of my team and can just give an email over here and find out. And then audio and video relay services are very, very helpful for me to stay in touch with my staff on complicated topics. How do you find someone? Well, you post an advertisement with Deaf Community Services here in San Diego. You can talk to the county's Department of Rehabilitative Services. And I already mentioned to you, we have wonderful relationships with several universities that are graduating very, very bright students. Now, I will tell you, a brand new student, no matter how well they're trained, is not going to be a seasoned 24-year-old veteran of our university. They've been in a different place. They don't have experience. They may have less life experience than a student who hears because our students who hear may have been overseas for a semester. They may have had work opportunities that a deaf student can't even get access to. So the key thing then is to make sure you have a really good, solid training program, that the person knows exactly what their job is, exactly where their resources are, who's in that environment that can help them, where they can go for help, and to tolerate no one on your team ever being sarcastic. That's just unacceptable. There should be no innuendos. There should be no sidebar conversations. Matt and Patty and I were in a meeting the day with a person from the outside who was coming, and we all met as a team. And she kept talking to me. I kept saying, no, talk to my team, because I can hear you. They can't hear you unless you look at them. And at one point, she finds, well, this is a sidebar conversation. I said, no, we don't do sidebar conversations. We have a whole conversation. It's not a sidebar because I can hear and they're deaf. We have a conversation for everybody. And so you are the advocate. You are the person that can stamp your foot and say, no, we don't do it that way around here. We're equal opportunity employer here at UCSD. So, diversity enriches everybody. It especially enriches you because your world will be broader and more interesting as your workforce is broader and more interesting. We'll do better service for our students. We'll do better service for our patients. And we will become that role model university. So I have lots of colleagues who are looking for jobs, and I would challenge all of you to look around your office, and next time you have a job opening, give us a call, and we'll send you some names. So thank you. And let me now open the conversation for any questions that have come up. Do any of you have a deaf colleague working in your department? In our team, we have, 4 colleagues who are deaf, and we've had 4 students this summer who are deaf. We've had two students from RIT and two students from their junior college program that feeds into RIT. So there are wonderful training programs out there. I would urge you to start that way because the students need placement. Many of them would like to come to California, but it's very hard for them to find a job here. And the university has been quite good about helping us with housing for them also. So that helps. So a paid internship that allows them to come out here and rent a university housing and get a little transportation back and forth to campus is invaluable. So my encouragement would be for you to start that way. Find an internship, a small pot of money, $2,000 to $4,000 now would get that going. If you're writing a grant, if you have a faculty member who's writing a grant, if you've got a budget you're putting in, put in some money for an intern. And then let us go to work and help you find someone that will fill the bill. And start that way. And then as you become more experienced, you may discover that you'd really like to hire that person when they graduate because they've learned a lot about your department. But if it's not a good fit, the student has still had a wonderful learning experience. And they have gained from being here. They're going to walk away with good feelings about UCSD, and that will help us attract more students and more employers. So I thank you for your time, but most importantly, from the bottom of my heart, I thank you for the interest that you show in reaching out to diverse communities that brought you here today, and I salute you all. I'm humbled by your being here. So thank you so much, and if my team or I can help, let us know. Thank you.
Well, I also would like to thank you for being here today. And one thing I'd like to mention is that, of course, this was recorded and it's available for the future. And usually I talk about it would be great if you know somebody who wanted to be here but didn't have time, they could see it. But what I think this could also be useful for is if you have a situation where you know that someone's a little unsure of what to do when they have an opportunity to hire someone who may be deaf or hard of hearing, ask them to view this video. Because I think it gives them some reassurance. And I get calls periodically where people say, well, we're not sure what to do. We've got an applicant who's deaf, and the job involves lots of communication. And I'd like to say, so what's the problem? But I do very gradually go through the process of saying, let's talk about that communication, and I'm sure that we can figure out a way to make this very easy for people to manage. So thanks very much for coming today. I will say that our next presentation is from Dr. Mark Schuchat. You may have heard of him. He's pretty well known. He works at the VA. He's done extraordinary research regarding some of the genetic issues associated with alcoholism. And we're very pleased to have him here. And he'll be here on October 2nd. Hope to see you then. Thank you.